But that's the woman that I had mentioned before. I researched her a little bit. There's a lot of controversy about her.
It's like
she's
a
real heavy.
What's her name again? It's like a bhakti kind of devotional kind of thing, right?
I don't know.
I don't know either. But I want a tub. Remember on that
tub? You want a tub?
A tub.
A tub of margarine. You soak your feet in the salt water, takes all the negativity out. And for some reason, I won one.
Right.
I forget why. I didn't answer any movies.
Your feet?
Did they
just
that time share? So we got a free tub.
We got a free tub. Yeah.
You went on the timeshare tour down at the ashram compound, and you weren't buyers, but you walked out with a free tub.
Well, we do have a little small shack somewhere in India. We never got there.
Now, this is where you do all of this stuff like
and
this.
And an orphanage that you support in Lhasa that you don't know about.
Otherwise,
it just spills everywhere.
Yeah, all the energy spills through.
You have a, what is the Jewish dome? It's a dome of resistance or something for any negative, you know, just somebody, that guy walking out there. Could like be piercing the dome. We're vulnerable.
Well, is that stuff like?
Is he okay?
Pretty specific to.
I'm gonna check this out.
Stuff. Is that like a common thing in India, Jeff? Like, you went there and you did all those kinds of things. Did you have to do all that kind of stuff?
What stuff?
Like a Sahaja yoga thing where you tie the pole and stuff.
It was. There was a physical component to it where it was like a protection.
Oh God.
You know.
Well, you have to, like, do all this cleansing. Your chakras.
And then, like, rev it up.
You have to, and then you have to tie it up. And when some people were doing it wrong. They were like, you know, you're putting the
negative energy toward
you. You're making it worse. Yeah, you're making it worse. Yeah.
You're turning all umber.
I was like, giving myself the evil eye, you know.
It's funny, because the guy behind me, he was doing it sick. Really? Is that all you have?
Yeah. Well, that was Francine. She was thinking her pocket was.
Now she's 10 bucks?
It's funny, though. You see people that do, like, that are really experienced with Tai Chi. Mm-hmm. Even though really kind of have had, I'm not saying bullshit, fire something over the top of your head stuff, but that seem to have some experience playing with energy like that. You can almost see it. Like a really experienced Tai Chi person is really kind of magical. Like what they're doing, it's cool. But I think when it gets in the hands of people that say, oh, you're not safe unless you like do this crap, and people start to believe it, that's what it's...
Well, I had a coworker. She was a therapist. She was in the pranic healing. She used to keep salt water behind her chair and... Do all that kind of stuff. Like, I guess salt water does something.
When do you draw the line between bullshit and sort of things that maybe have merit? It's hard to tell. Like, I think Tai Chi is pretty cool. I don't choose to practice it myself, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I even do yoga still. I love yoga, but I don't believe anything about it. I just do it because it makes my body feel good. It's just, I don't have a big story about it.
Don't you think it's better coming from the other direction? You know, trying some stuff out, and then, you know, it's more like you get into it because it feels, you know, not like, oh, I'm going to do this, and then maybe it'll feel good. And I don't think feel good is the right word, but, you know, there's something going on. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You try it out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess if you believe it, it works, but if you don't believe it, like if you're from Australia and, you know, you have your own rituals, like...
An Australian ritual.
or what do you call those people down there?
Aborigines.
Native American. But they have a chakra system too, I think. But they have burns. I don't know much about it.
It's funny.
Really?
I've had people tell me, it was the, I don't know, when I was in the ministry school, it was like, you know, we got a couple different versions of what the colors were for the different directions. And I had somebody tell me east is this.
Yeah.
West is this. South, and I'm like, I humored the person, but I didn't. I'm like, it just didn't. It didn't resonate at all with me that you take something that's so non-literal and literalize it, and then like hold on to it. I think that's the difference when you literalize something and you get that white knuckle grip, and you're, this is how it is. I think that's what differentiates the things that are really like run, go the other way very quickly, versus
That's more like an experimental mindset.
Yeah.
You know, be willing to experiment, but
you can be kind of playful with stuff and kind of easy with the world around you and what goes on.
Right.
You don't have to throw everything out. I mean, if somebody in your family has a baby and they want you to come to the baby blessing, why not?
Sure.
You know, and you're not going to go, oh, we don't do baby blessings, you know. You go to weddings, you participate.
Wed in Rome, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. You still seem to have a life to live. You can be as skeptical or as sort of non-
I mean, you create a sacral, I mean.
Right?
Is that more authentic than anything else?
You don't have to spin huge stories so around and make it a huge thing.
Suddenly he's Harpo Marx.
He needs bigger eyebrows.
You could say the an observable quality or membrane on one side of the membrane, one is seeking impressions.
Impressions?
You're seeking impressions. Think of all desire, all restlessness, all anticipation, all interest in an activity, either in participating in it or avoiding it. It all comes down, right, into kind of a least common denominator to seeking impressions. What is experiencing?
An impression.
Yes, right? It's profound, say, participation or engagement with the mystery of impression. And you're being participating, engaging in, or refusing the very interesting palette of impression. Your impression now is not just what you're thinking or even what you're feeling emotionally or biologically. The field of impression that's present now is immeasurable. We don't even have enough words to, right? Try to categorize what's present in any given moment.
I think that's why this is more interesting than home with a video or out at a concert. Like, this is more interesting than that because it's an invitation to kind of expand your intake of expression. It's a pointer to that. And that's way more interesting than just about anything else.
You can see that being available for impressions, experiencing, holds a certain fascination. Novelty, experience, what we call the movement or passage of time, moving into the next moment, feeling oneself, right? Navigating with the impressions that are present. And then we might be inspired to become a demonstrator. In other words, to grab our magic wand and start moving stuff around in the impression field or influencing others or fixing a shit or doing whatever we do. So now we've become interactive with the mystery of impressions. We're actors in the field of impressions. So our experience is now, right? It's charged. It's very seductive. It's very attractive to us because we're operating in the world in a creative manner. We can use tools and materials or voice, behavior, commitments, refusals. We can, you know, manage the purchase or preparation of food according to taste. We can jump in a vehicle
with the American flag on the front.
skinheads have come to town.
Is this Tennessee? Or?
Yeah. So you see how remarkable it is. The present atmosphere, ecology of impressions.
And where they just trying to grapple with that idea and mood, you know, just to put a word on it, or the feeling, or whatever you want to call it, because I definitely have moods, you know.
Of course.
And some of that, I don't know, I don't think that's equated to impressions, but I think that there's an imbuement of this mood back out.
Moods, which are subtle and remarkable, because the mood can be comfort, discomfort, irritability, fatigue, emotional in a pleasant way, emotional in an unpleasant way, impatience, apprehension, confidence, relaxation, poise, right? And then the mood of, you know, the passing of the weather, humidity to coolness, sun to rain. I mean, what is inviting you, not imposing upon you, but what is inviting you to feel is remarkable. Experiencing is, simply put, the miracle of impression. And that's on. And the five senses are just one plenum, or five plenums, if you want to call them that, you could say, through which impression occurs. But in addition to the five sense windows and how we're processing the data stream of the five sense windows, there are all these also present moods, subtleties.
It informs the sense of peace. Like if you're in a really piss poor mood and you've got some physical discomfort, it's going to feel bigger than if you're, you know, doing really good and you know, you barely notice it.
You can see how remarkably interwoven all of these impression vibrations are, and right, cooperatively influence what we call the experience I'm having now. And it's really so much that we can't even report on it.
Well, you know, a question about that, you know, because Peter would get into that a lot, you know, about, I remember him talking about he'd be waiting in the doctor's office for an hour. It doesn't really faze you at all. It sounds like the idea of that there's continuing novelty in the midst of just, you know, seemingly unchanging environment. Sometimes,
well,
I find
yes.
It really difficult to maintain a mood of novel inspiration.
Well put, but before we get there, there being what I was referring to as the other side of the membrane, we're first exploring this side of the membrane, which is the strange, mysterious beatitude of experiencing as multivalent impression. To really feel how profound it is from moment to moment. And more curiously, that if we were asked to report as sincerely as we could on what you're experiencing now, you can't do it. Because whatever you might select as a report on the present quality of your experience, you know instinctively is a mere ambiguous fraction of the entirety of your present experience. And that even committing anything to speech as a report on one's present condition is so fractured and so fragmented that it cannot really do justice or have any accuracy with respect to the entirety of your experience right now. It could be useful to see that. When we become, let's say, short-tempered and just internally even, we're doing that because we have become selectively or by habit unaware of the entirety of the multivalent nature of present experience and become myopically focused on one or several elements or iterations of discomfort or apprehension or impatience or anger or some kind of self abnegating, right, accusation, right? The I'm no good, the I'm not enough, the I'm so mad at you because I feel guilty about what I said to you and you're mad at me and I'm fearful of it, so I'm mad at you more than I'm, mm-hmm. right? And
what's
so
wrong with me?
Right, and so we create cascades of yeah. compensatory yeah. psychological vocabulary and emotion because we just can't really get to the simple heart of what my present disturbance or apprehension or fear actually is. And so most of the time you could say we're walking around in, right, exaggerated compensatory ideas about ourselves in a virtual imagination. We're so disconnected from, the absolute bounty of impressions that we're operating in, right? A very narrow, call it narrow-minded or narrow field of what we're telling ourselves is happening right now, which is conducting the way that we're experiencing our, right, the present gift of whatever this is or isn't.
Seems like it's kind of a vicious loop. If you've got something playing in your mind that's not sitting well with you, that's troubling you,
mm-hmm.
it's going to take more and more of your attention, so you see less and less of just this.
It does have a tendency to do that. Yeah, it has a funneling effect, right?
Yeah. So you kind of you miss this more and more, which it's actually this that gives you some input that's so far beyond that little bubbling
yeah.
trouble.
Right.
Impression.
Sobriety is spelled so far beyond. Yeah.
And sometimes it's sort of like go there more intensely and it might shift or the opposite, right? Which is
expand out.
Yeah.
Peter kind of says, you know, well, what else? Look at what else there is. Mm-hmm. And there might be this thing that's just really there. What else is there? There's always just so much more. It makes that look like nothing.
The encouragement, the practical encouragement that, you know, he's aiming at is a little bit what we were talking about yesterday, is the confidence or appreciation that this just isn't what you think or feel it is. It's also, you know, in the metaphors, rainbow body and radiant mind and void. And so look over there. Right is an invitation, a hearkening to get out of, to remove one's attention from a myopic, right, condition, a myopic certainty, a myopic confidence, to expand the aperture of feeling, expand the aperture of texture.
It's like what you do to babies. Look over here. Look at the.
Oh yeah.
Take one. Like,
yeah. Okay.
Design.
Yeah. Yeah.
It still works with me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Plenty of rattles in your house, yeah. Yeah. Okay, Kev. I'm good, I'm good. Squirrel! So, if I may introduce something a little subtler. We can spend one or a million lifetimes, right, navigating, enjoyably or otherwise, the magic of impressions. And all of these yogas that are sold to you, unfortunately, rely on your vulnerability, your irritability, your lack of self-confidence, your fear, mm-hmm. your tendency for projection and transference, to feel like now you're part of something more solid, more big, that has more knowledge, with an authoritative guru either in the hall or back somewhere in India that might broadcast to you via, you know, satellite. And so at long last I'm gonna be okay.
Even if I'm not now, I'll get it at some point.
Yes. So the initiation, right, is well, I'm going to be okay. I was just initiated, though involuntarily, and it was, you know, imposed upon me without my permission. I've just been initiated into Dhyan, you know, meditation, Dhyan yoga, by the likes of Swami Ken or the Shiva Bali Yogi, dead or alive. And you're like, excuse me, what? But some others might go, oh, I've been initiated. You know? And so Sahaja Yoga, or whatever is being sold, engulfs you in, you know, ritual, imposes imaginary fear upon you, vulnerability upon you, negative energy upon you. It ritualizes what you need to do to mitigate negative energy that's coming from outside, unfriendly sources, other than you. And so now you have to protect yourself so that then you can rise to a level of, as we were talking a few days ago, the delicious solution of invulnerability. You see? So they're all preying on you. All of these systems are preying on you.
And it's a dangerous world, and you better protect yourself from it. He's right into that. And here I'll give you this.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. And you can see this in any of these institutions that you might hang out in, not just once as a guest, but you have to spend a little time, right, to begin to see the seething creep of conformist mind, of fear, of what's being imposed upon you ritually so that you can be a good Vipassana practitioner, so that you can be a good Christian, so that you can be a good tithing Jew, so that you can be a renowned or esteemed practitioner of Sahaja Yoga or in the Swami Ken organization. I mean, when you look at the Swami Ken biography, you see that what was created there to make Swami Ken worthy of your worship, worthy of your devotion, and someone that you want to be initiated by, is that he was in very close with the guru, not the original, but the second round of Shiva Bali Yogi, who saw something magical in him. Ah, and everyone, of course, wants to be recognized by a parent figure as some having a magical quality. I've been looking for, you know, for a long time. God damn it. And
now that you're initiated.
Yeah, I know. I'm feeling much better about myself. And so Swami Ken's legitimacy was sold by virtue of intimacy with the guru, right? Spiritual experiences, and going into lengthy samadhis in behind closed doors for hours on end, which for us is a superhuman feat, right? So then you see that an idealized persona has been created of a person, a Westerner, attracted to something mysterious, being recognized as someone worthy of giving special attention to, then acquiring magical powers, in this case, lengthy, lengthy hours of
meditation. So it's one big placebo
meditation
effect.
That's all it is. That's all it is.
But I mean, in some ways, it would be nice to buy into a placebo effect because that shit works, right?
Like, it only works for a little bit.
Does it?
Well, look at the placebo effects that you have already purchased. Your
meditation.
Job, your partner, your clothing, your career, your family, right? I mean, experiencing as an incredible improvisational flow of impersonal impressions is accompanied by all kinds of placebo. Yes?
Neti, neti.
Right?
Almost every choice that's made throughout the day for me is based on what I believe is going to keep me out of difficulty and pain and in a safe space.
Fair enough.
And it's bullshit.
That's right.
I believe it, and I move through my life, and I do
That's
certain
right.
things because I believe it.
Yes, so what's happening, practically speaking, is that we don't need a Sahaja Yogi Guru or a Swami Ken or a whomever to initiate us. We've initiated ourselves. We behave inwardly from the vantage point of absolute superstition and imposed, right, consequences that would compromise my security. Would compromise the placebos that I've invested in.
Yep.
Now, we can become very, very upset, as in very, very depressed, as in clinically depressed, as in paralyzed, and not know what to do with ourselves, not find any extroverted serotonin value in the gift of living when this kind of superstition runs runs away, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And when we're like that, then a Swami Ken is a fucking lifesaver.
Here, I'll give you some meaning.
Please, yeah, I'll give you meaning. Let's say, and my investments have gone sour, and my girlfriend left me, and I'm going to the buffet way too often, and I just can't find an ounce of joy, or autonomy, or confidence, or promise, or participate in some combination of placebos to feel like living is, you know, worth doing tomorrow. I've become the Prozac poster boy of 2014. I'm not going to turn to my parents if they're still alive. They're insane. There's no trust or intimacy there.
That's their fault.
Yeah, that's their fault. And that ended it, you know, soon after I was bar mitzvahed anyway. So where do I go, right? I mean, this is the panic. This is the crisis.
So is there some utility for it then? I mean, I guess for anything that comes along after that, I mean, it might be just more and more mediocre as you go. Maybe this is less mediocre than other things.
Well, we're playing around with the, you know, the karma-less karma. The appearance of, right, motivating factors, milestones, special persons, events, right, educational programs, adult programs, relationships that have occurred in your life that have created for you, you know, a reasonably palatable, if not occasionally joyful, placebo effect, so that it's cool to get through a day and it's worth it to wake up tomorrow. It doesn't mean we're overwhelmed with joy, but I'm not racked with insecurity. And so it's like, okay, I'm good, neutral's good. Yes.
It'll do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the entirety of this neurosis is appearing, if I may reinforce, on this side, the A side, the left side, these are imaginary boundaries, of the membrane that I'm referring to as with impression, with experiencing. Right? All of what we're talking about appears in the ecology, atmosphere of life, appearing to you in an incredible matrix of impressions. And what we do to, in a sense, filter or limit those impressions so that we can walk kind of merrily through the day and not end up in a loony bin, on an ashram, or in jail, and I'm not sure which one is worse.
Even caffeine, they say people who drink coffee are less likely to commit suicide.
I'm having too much fun. Too much fun. Too much fun. Squirrel.
Well, it's the idea of it. At least I have my coffee.
At least
right?
You've got some.
Well, I mean, that kind of New York City Sunday morning ritual of the paper and the bagel and the coffee and the lox, depending, no matter what culture you're in there, you know, everyone's doing bagels and cream cheese and lox and paper and coffee.
The same would be true for cigarettes.
Doesn't matter who they are.
Yeah, if you took that away.
Cigarettes kill you out, right? You know, that would probably be true.
Giraffes, right?
So let's look, let's look for a moment at the face of a Ramana Maharshi. So what you're peering into is just another human, even though maybe he earned the title Bhagavan, whatever. But what you're peering into is the face of, right, call it a durational primate that is released from the myth and a tar baby of impressions. He hasn't worked shit out within the ecology of impressions. He's completely on the other side of the invisible membrane where impressions are no longer running, right? His consciousness, his first-hand experience. Yes?
He still has first-hand experience.
Sure.
Impressions probably still show up.
Yeah.
He's got to, like, take a shower and, you know, eat and all that stuff, but...
Yeah. Underneath the, right, durability of one's physicality, and therefore a fresh diaper each day, right? And a nice, you know, piled high plate of rice, right? We're looking at the, what's really, 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 really happening or not happening presently.
Is it like a surrender? It's like a giving up of, I am hanging together because all this that I do, because I believe it's going to...
It's not causal, so you can't really nail it that way.
That's what it appears to be almost.
Conversationally, all of those metaphors have their place. They have some degree of merit. Yes, but none of them can really stick.
It's impossible for a normal person to say, I'm going to surrender because I want that. Because the surrendering is a doing.
Yeah, yeah. So well, you're back, you're still in the mirage of, right? Mm-hmm. Personal durability in an ecology of hoping for, cultivating, or attempting to occupy improved impressions. Even seeking peace is what? Well, it's a better portfolio of impressions. Right? Seeking enlightenment is what? Well, it's an imaginary improved portfolio of impressions.
If I didn't think I'd get something here, I would not be here.
Who knows? We don't know. You don't know, because you're just not nearly in control of what you think is going on as you may think you are.
I mean, I know I'm going to get dinner, but there's something else that goes with driving up to Doylestown on a regular basis.
It's really hard to say. It's not measurable. Why is that? Because your already prescient nature is not, cannot be subsumed by measure. And that's what's driving your boat. Your already prescient nature is singing through the chorus of you and suggesting this might be a good place for you to hang out. And that song, the sonorous nature of your prescient instinct is not rational.
And for lots of people, the song that's sung is Go Hang Out with Swami Kendra.
Yes, 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 there's
he's
no
the,
doubt.
He's the man.
Yes, there's no doubt.
Thank God, mine takes me years.
Very few people would agree with you, but you're fucked. What can I say?
Plenty of room. Well, only because I
that's
got
why there's plenty of room.
Food.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. But once somebody gets the awareness of no self, right, then everything must just... It just seems weird to me that then, you know, somebody would want to teach anything to anybody anyway. Like, if it's just... If there's just awareness of oneness or whatever, then... I don't know.
Well, could it,
it would be useful for you to discover.
Well, it just seems like there it happened once or something, but I don't remember. But it seems like I had this weird. It was, you know, there was this weird awareness of like it just being very weird and that why would anybody teach? You know, something, you know, like it was just bizarre, you know, but it went away.
If you have an insight into, may we refer to that as a uninvited simplicity?
Yeah.
Absolute guileless simplicity.
Yeah. I'm sure there's still some guile
there,
yeah.
We can normally not drop a little guile.
There was enough self to have guile. Yeah.
And as that visits you,
yeah,
for fun, you could say you're on this side of the membrane, the side of the membrane that is no longer seduced by, available for, or gives a care for even any continuity of impression. All mental, emotive, psychological, spiritual restlessness is flatlined. Not crushed, just disappears. Right? The hunger for seeking and participating, engaging in impressions.
It's kind of like being on a... You got a parachute. You've been floating and tossed by the winds, and you just finally gently just land. And you realize, oh my God, it's like just a gentle feet on the ground here. Nothing big, nothing, but you just land. It's like, oh.
It's remarkably subtle. It can look like that and maybe a thousand, if not a million or more, other ways. But the collapse of the appetite for any more impressions is not trivial. Being able to articulate this is also not trivial. When you look at the liturgy of the Sahaja, the Swami Ken, etc., 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 you will see a liturgy that's absolutely steeped in the myth of impressions, in the myth of consciousness, in the myth of your becoming or benefiting by an improved relationship with living.
They're selling specialness.
Yes.
You will be special if you... And you're already special because we've initiated you into this.
And or freedom from suffering. Freedom from bright angst.
Being special.
Yes, of course.
I'm special enough that I don't have to deal with the inhumanity of being here and
right.
in a body.
And so compassion and freedom and equanimity and all of these things that are sold either on the Hindu or the Buddhist encampment are myth that appear in the ecology of impressions. And what our dear friend Swami Ken is selling, and the verbiage, and the pictures, and the ritual, and the vibhuti, and the dhyan, and the devotional singing, is enrollment in impressions from a Hindu-esque framework, where your commitment to meditation, devotion, and tithing to the guru or the institution is going to be of service to you, and if you're lucky, someday maybe you'll sit in a room for 6 hours without moving, and I don't know what that will get you, besides a sore foot or something. You see how it's being sold?
Deep vein thrombosis.
Deep vein thrombosis is where you end up. We should just put that on the brochure. Deep vein thrombosis. So, the capacity of your sensitivity, your intelligence, is to see right through. Now is a good time. The myth of impressions. The myth of experiencing itself. The myth that you need to come out the other side.
I guess it's just
You should have something to show for yourself. What if you were free from the urgency imposed upon you from outwardly or inwardly that you need to have something to show for yourself?
Isn't there a balance to this? Because it seems to me that losing confidence, and I mean that sort of in a good way, of the impressions can occur a little bit ahead of confidence in I don't know how to phrase it.
I think the loss of that confidence is not all at once.
Right, but however it goes, and it's always changing and wafting around and stuff like that. But I mean, there is this angst, this existential angst, I think, that sort of goes along with that when things are sort of out of sync. Sometimes it's almost like you can't help yourself but enjoy it.
You can never help yourself.
Yes. But I mean, it freely flows in. And you allow. And other times, it's like you're on guard because you got important things to deal with and stuff. But the loss of confidence and all that stuff that's going on, when that goes, and you're not feeling it, you're not getting that nourishment. Other ways that can be difficult.
the ecology of impressions is a miracle. It's an unbounded, right, nefarious infinitude of miracle. And it includes everything. All moods, all progress, all life mistakes, all despair, all samadhi.
So maybe the way I was framing it sort of sounds like a teeter-totter. Maybe that's the wrong way.
But that's also quite legitimate when you look at your own experience, right? From the vantage point of recall, right? You're assessing based on recall. And you have some confidence, as any of us do, in, oh, I remember times when I was the shit. And I remember times when I was shit.
Or maybe right now.
Fine. Yes, but if I may, we can go back to the curious observation that cannot really convey with any confidence what's occurring right now. Because it's partial. It's a hypnosis. It's plucked from an immeasurable infinitude to become the de facto report on what's happening right now. Like, good luck.
It's just like mythically the technology for awakened states was some sort of silence, either be it a Christian mystic or a Eastern mystic. At least from a mythical point of view.
Well, when you look at the Jesuits, and the Buddhists, or anyone that puts on a robe and bails out.
Yeah.
Right? There's an emphasis on retreating from the world, making strawberry shortcakes or raising dogs. the shit that they do in monasteries to keep it together.
Yeah.
That's the kind I like.
Raising dogs and Christmas cakes.
Is that where you get St. Bernard?
But yeah, I don't know. So you see, we have those, right, popping up all over the culture, across all religious, right?
Yeah, Indians going into sweat lodges. And
the Kiva, sweat lodge, yeah.
So
the happy ending down at massage. Yeah.
But clearly it's not required. To retreat from the world. I mean, this world, as I got that a long time ago. If I can't use what's in my life every day as fodder for what I seek, then what the hell good is it? Because I really, for a while I thought, maybe I shouldn't go off and live in a cave, but I always knew that wasn't very practical. I wasn't going to do that.
Some folks do who it's really appropriate for. Some folks do it who it's not appropriate for. Some people stay in the world who it's appropriate for. Some people stay in the world that probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
But a little bit of time, quiet and separate, is not always bad. It's kind of nice, mix it up a little. Like, I think vacations or just, doing something completely different is really nice just for it opens your eyes a little bit. Like, you tend to get really numb driving the same paths all the time, doing the same things. And, to mix it up and have a different path for a little bit is really kind of in line with it. It's refreshing.
Well, that whole thing about people would rather administer themselves electric shocks than be in a room by themselves. Did you guys see that?
I mentioned it
before. I mean, that just tells you how, hard that is, right? So maybe that does hurt. Maybe that's harder than raising a special needs child. I don't know. Is it? I mean, I think the latter would be harder.
Although it was, I would imagine it's a novel experience to get shocked, and some people could say it's maybe a little bit of a machismo to see what I'm capable of.
Oh, you mean the silent...
No, I'm saying to elect to shock you.
I mean,
who knows?
Yeah, I think it was just theoretical.
It's more than just the pain of this whole psychological trip.
All of these are, right, symptoms that appear within the ecology of impressions. right? The ecology of being identified with a body,
yeah.
Right? Born, discreetly occurring, separate. And the neurosis, the fear, the anxiety, the separation that occurs if someone is isolated,
yeah.
Involuntarily, and cannot handle mm-hmm. the shock and awe of being mm-hmm. isolated, and will do whatever they need to do to mm-hmm. create, you know, serotonin effects, you know, biting yourself, mm-hmm. right? It can, you know, humans can do very interesting things, as can animals, right, when mm-hmm. isolation occurs.
You know, the funny thing is, when you're talking about impressions, it's like you can be very intrigued about some impression that rings through as similar to another impression. You're equating these impressions. And meanwhile, things are going, it's chaos all over. But you're focusing on something like, oh, that, and I'm big into that, I'm always doing that. You say something, I think of something else, and I have to express it. But it's even true with comedians doing impressions. When they do a right-on impression of somebody else that you know, it's like, it's fun and sort of joyous to see mm-hmm. that similarity coming through again, mm-hmm. you know? It's like, I don't know, it's just an observation that here, instead of the novelty, it's almost you're celebrating the sameness, you know?
You are tickled by the things that tickle you. That you could say your life's journey is to find out how many you got. How many ways can you be tickled organically by living your life? Why not spend your entire life poor on someone else's couch, always barreling headlong into novelty, and finding out how many weird, cool things you can possibly do? You know, before an illness or the IRS or, you know, a bus or something takes you down. I mean, how many of us live like that? Not many. You know, we might think that people that have celebrity and wealth, that have the capacity, by virtue of, you know, money and schedule, to go places, exotic places, either where money is needed, or exotic places that are more, right, off the beaten path.
I don't know. Every famous guru ever.
You could do that. I don't know how many people, you know, do that. I mean, you've been to the Cannes, you know, festival once, or, you know, the Riviera, or an exotic place, et cetera, et cetera. Doesn't it get ho-hum?
Not another exotic place.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
All these people waiting.
It'd be fun to see Burning Man one time.
Get a plane, go. It's happening.
It's happening soon. But actually,
pull in.
I feel like just looking at the pictures is like, I get the idea.
Well, you know full well, you know full well that the idea is not the same as having that dust in your nostrils. Yeah, yeah, no way. But we're playing around with just how marvelous, let's call it life. We don't know what else to fucking call it. Can be as an ecology of impressions, an ecology of novelty, of unpredictability, of fearlessness, of hurling yourself into the wind and seeing what shows up. Whether you got $30 in your pocket or 30 grand that you can always get wired in when you need it, right? On your 1 or 2 year sabbatical, on your life adventure.
My nephews were, like, one of them in particular, where they took a bus across the country, and he thought it was just the greatest thing. He had a blast. He's like, there's so much fun. Buses are
by
awesome.
Himself.
Yeah, he just loved it.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you know, being on a bus across the country sounds like hell. He was just, he had that adventure.
Yeah. Well, maybe for you it would be an Amtrak. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. So there's a certain kind of, you know,
that's
comfort
funny.
That we want to be accustomed to. So we can see how marvelous, what a gift, our so-called life is within the ecology of impressions. And we can either assess wisely, kindly, or unkindly, just how well we are responding to the gift. And that can either drive you insane, because I'm a fucking sellout, right? Here's life. Here's the miracle of sentience and bioluminosity and locomotion. What am I doing here with all of you? But I mean, that's, you know, anyone can, right? Everyone is entitled to say this. Or what are you doing here with the likes of you? Yourself. Your life. You know, what commitments and obligations you've agreed to make.
What are we doing here?
Yeah. And when we play around with that, you can kind of get a sense of just how complacent we become, yes, with the routine of our ecology of impressions. You're always you. Right? Right? You're always you. You go here, you go here, you go here, you go here, you go here. You move through the vicissitudes of living, or the passing of, you know, dear ones, or weddings, or births, or brisses, or Easter, or funerals, right? You pass through the vicissitudes of the great ocean of life, right? And, okay, how you doing? Okay? Right, are we okay? I mean, am I kind of like unconsciously waiting for which of my two parents is going to finally need to be institutionalized or, you know, lose it? And do you think I want to go to their funeral? Do you think I want to be surrounded by my nuclear and extended family, wear a suit, and sit in the midst of, you know, the grieving of the loss of a parent? It's the last place I want to be. It's like, hey, I'm really sorry this happened. I love you all. Corned beef's on me. Gotta run.
I'm with you on that one. Jeez.
You know what I mean? Just the sheer pressure of the lamentation of all of these humans bearing down on you. It's like, hey, I fucking love everybody here. I gotta go. I mean, you know, Beth wisely gave me a little feedback about the party I went to where I isolated myself like an idiot. I mean, it's embarrassing.
Well, it's embarrassing inside myself to pretend I'm somebody that I'm not. It's either there or it's not.
Yeah.
I had to get really honest with somebody in my life that I just wasn't, it just didn't interest me to do something. And I was stuck between a rock and a hard place. You fake it, nah, that doesn't work. Or
right.
You get honest, well, it causes repercussions.
Oh, yeah.
When you start to get really honest about where you want to be and what you want to do,
yeah,
you just can't be the fake it person anymore.
No. It's a little rough. But that's the easy side. That's still within the field of ecology, the ecology of impressions.
Yeah, see
what happens when you hang out for a few minutes in... Right? Just being done.
Toast.
You know, not with an exotic commitment or stature of any kind. No stature, just being done. Spontaneously, instantaneously, for fun, with the entire ecology of impressions.
There's an innocence about like how you operate. Too, it's like there is no agenda. There wasn't much choice, and when there's not much choice, there's an innocence about it.
It's heart-rending, heart-openingly innocent.
Like, please don't shoot me because I can't even defend myself. But
don't even talk to me.
What it is.
I can't defend myself from your ideas. I cannot defend myself from the fact that you think you're a human. I can't do it. Please, if you feel like being a human, which is fantastic, please go talk to someone over there. I can't even hear it. I mean, years ago, Jesus, the guru was, this was the, I think the third visit Prahlad had made to the United States. And we somehow weren't able to meet him at, you know, Kennedy Airport, where he was coming in from, you know, whatever it was, Calcutta through Europe, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we had to rendezvous with him in Brooklyn, down Flatbush Avenue, way off in a corner where island people live, you know, in Brooklyn. It's like, it's beyond where the Jews live. Keep going beyond, go beyond the Lubavitchers to all the way out to and make a right. That was the neighborhood. Cool neighborhood. I have no idea what condition it might be in today.
You say it's where the islanders hang out?
Well, yeah, the Jamaica. Caribbean folk, yeah. Yeah, Caribbean folk live there. Fantastic. And he was sitting there, the vulnerability, the innocence, absolute transcendence of impressions was just pouring out of him.
Jesus?
Prahlad. And I was just weeping. I just wept. Because oh my God.
He wasn't, you know, taken in. In other words, there was no. Was there? I mean, I don't know. How do you describe something like that?
It's very radiant.
Totally undefended.
It's very radiant.
Does our interest elicit some of that in you?
Hmm.
Does our interest in attendance here elicit some of that in you?
Well, yes, and more importantly, of course, in yourself. Yeah, that's where. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Take interest and attention. Where do you put your interest and attention?
Yeah. You see, if we conduct or engage interest and attention in an open-minded, open-hearted manner of discovery, what ensues, quite organically, is undefendedness.
You're getting a
taste of you, your nature, free from impressions. That's the seat. That's the asan of the yogi. That's the asan of the yogi, is freedom from impressions. So you can see how space-time, which, right, whirls around as someone living in the ecology of experiencing, the ecology of impressions, appears to be solid, right? A guaranteed, right, limit field. But your nature without impression, without measure, without imposition or assertion, space-time is not ruling the roost. Now, you know, this kind of begs the question, how far, and I don't mean far away from here, we could say how deep, maybe, right? How intimate, maybe, how subtle, how sublime, maybe, are you ready to be? Right? Because you don't stand up in front of, you know, the esteemed community of, let's say, Pebble Hill Church and introduce an absolutely undefended sublimity. If nobody's interested in that, even that exists, or that it might even be worth, right, looking into.
You speak it in French and it
would just get entrained into the visionary experiences.
It would be cognitive dissonant.
Yeah.
Cognitive dissonance. Yeah, because if we are embroiled in the ecology of impressions, and celebrating in a good way, in an enviable way, right? Celebrating the myth of self, then being absolutely innocent, right? Void of the myth of experiencing and the myth of impressions is not an interest of yours. It's not on your radar. It's not on your karmic radar. It's not on your dharmic radar. So you can, right? You can creep very close to whomever you might find in your life that exudes a certain thing that you're interested in, right? You can get pretty close. And it's good. It's good to get close. It's good to challenge yourself and see how close you're willing and wishing and able to get. Right? Because the cessation of you is not trivial. And by getting close, you find out whether you're in or not yet. Right? Whether that dynamism, which is clearly gone into your soul, is going to take you all the way home, or whether you have some other business to accomplish in your life on Earth before you might be willing to make yourself available to unencumbered sublimity, which is cool.
Yeah, there's always challenges.
The ecology of impressions is, right, the samsara is not to be missed, not to be beat. you only become invited into sublimity when something of a weird nature, immeasurable nature, has just kind of been triggered in your experience, and you can hear it. You can listen or participate in a conversation whose emphasis is about, right, the homecoming of sublimity. Otherwise,
define sublimity.
Yourself. Yourself without a future.
Just. Anybody else want ice cream?
No thanks. Need some water, Jeff, or something?
Yes. I'll just steal hers.
Okay. Yeah.
Yourself without a future. This consciousness, this mystery, this profound myth of being, having no future.
So if you look it up in the dictionary, there's a picture of you without future.
Yeah. We lose sight of, or the feeling tone of, this profundity through, yes, abstraction, anecdote, hypotheticals, triggered impressions, a movie, something that happened to me, a conversation I heard, a book I read, a guru I saw, right? Yes. So here's you. Here's the beauty of you. Outwardly and inwardly, the beauty of you. No future. That's the gateway, if you will, right? Your present experience is the culmination and the gateway to unspeakable sublimity. And then you figure out whether, you know, that's a door you like to knock on.
You know, somewhere along the line I ran across this thing where the cross was defined as, you know, you've got this horizontal mode of time and continuation.
Yep.
And you've got this vertical mode of great depth and no time. It's just interesting to see, you know, there's always these attempts to bring the Christian system into some kind of overarching, almost Buddhist-like approach.
Well, it's interesting, you know, like coming to these kinds of things will be like that sort of no past, no future kind of thing. And then eventually, though, the myth will invade and be like, okay, I gotta go home now. Or something, you know, like,
Well, there's still the encumbrance of, you know, whatever, you know, I goofed off and didn't get work done I had to do, and I was guilt about it, and that comes flying back, like, in the early morning hours or whatever, you know.
Future.
Yeah.
Yes, right. Being participating lovingly or reluctantly in the imagination of boundary fields. Right? Self-assessment.
Otherwise, you know,
it's self-assessment, not most of all, I think.
Yeah. How practical were you today?
If your myth didn't invade in, like, you know, how would you find your way home? You'd just, like, go to other people's houses, like Byron Katie, you know?
It's just habit.
She would just go in people's houses or something like that.
She knows where her bank is.
He'd be like a dog that followed any, you know, owner home. Hey.
Why not have periods of days, months, maybe even years where you don't know where your house is?
Well, people go on retreats for those, for that very purpose, and then they come back.
Yeah. You see, but let's say you get a taste of this side of the membrane, mm-hmm. where you are no longer a dupe to the miracle of impressions. Mm-hmm. All you can see in your own nature is absolute unencumbered receptivity, pure novelty. Pure novelty without a subject, pure novelty without an object.
It's just too much going on right here.
It's just a lot of,
And so this wisdom, pure novelty without a subject or an object, will happily leap back over the fence to place itself within impressions, mm-hmm. frames of reference, measurable boundary fields, self-assessment. Are you a total fuck-off, or did you at least do something this weekend? Something. Right? And it's very funny that we measure ourselves that way because why? Because, well, here is where your life is now. Right? It's not foolish to say that your entire life led
to right now.
To right now. What choice did it have? Yes? And right now, who gives a fuck what you've done, what you haven't done, what you did well, what you did poorly? Are you right now actually the measure of whatever you imagined occurred prior to this moment? Are you? If you were, we would need a lot of drugs, strong drugs, right? Just to mitigate the impacts, right? The psychic burden of you being the product of everything that happened prior to this moment.
Well, there's the mental hospital.
And, well, when we become uber depressed or act out and can no longer function reasonably within social agreements, you could say it's because we have become overwhelmed, right? Imaginarily, overwhelmed imaginarily, that we are indeed the product of everything that happened prior to this moment.
Taking it all on.
Right? Yeah. See what happens to the psyche when it takes this too seriously? Mm-hmm. It goes berserk.
Or could it just be fear of the future? It could be either future or past.
It's the same. They're the same because they're both virtual. Yeah. So it might be fun to discover or play around with that your present experience, though in one respect is the culmination of everything that occurred in your so-called life prior to this moment, you are also miraculously, absolutely unburdened by everything that you imagine occurred prior to this moment.
It's kind of cool.
It's way cool. Again, if you're right, if you're invited into that discovery, you're going to find it way cool.
It's being born again, being saved.
There's no question that it's being born again and being saved.
Evangelical nights, guys.
Never born again.
Yeah, never born is even better than born again. Yeah, not born in the first place is better.
NFB, never fucking born.
Never fucking born.
It's like the born identity and born supremacy. Where can we go?
Wasn't that your movie? No, that was somebody else's.
That was Terry's movie.
That's
right.
That was funny.
It's Kevin's.
How about you, Mary Poppins?
Yeah.
That was a cute one. I like that one.
Mary Poppins, yeah.
Everybody got a movie on.
Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah. Lisa.
I jumped in to define my own before anybody had a chance to lay one on me.
Actually, I had a TV show, but...
In mind. All right, you had a TV show.
I Dream of Jean.
It was Lost.
Yeah.
If we're fortunate to feel this, as in the ecology of present experiencing... relaxed, if not released from, the hallucination and restlessness of impressions. That encounter will, not that it's even worthwhile, change your life. It'll change your life. And that might be nice to hear for someone who's interested in having their life change. Right? But who gives a shit? It's the sublimity, the golden ring, that the sublimity is so, is the, yes, this is the end all or be all of being. You don't have a concern that an encounter of any kind should have any impact on the imagination of your life. If you want something to change your life, it's kind of a steep climb. To see that you never actually had a life might even be easier. It's more radical, but it might be easier.
There is a perceptual shift, it seems like. It feels like stepping on ice, and you're just flying forward.
Yes.
And you're seeing the same things that you were just kind of noticing, you know, occasionally before.
Yeah.
And now you're seeing them all in rapid fire. I mean, to me,
yes,
there's a quickening of all that noticing.
Yes, there can be. Yeah. Yeah, heightened sensitivity without internal dialogue squeezing you out.
Yeah.
Is unspeakable.
When you're running one contact, everybody starts to fade out a little anyway.
Yeah.
You're disappearing. It's like Back to the Future when the shirt's disappearing. It was never born.
You're doing your movies. Yeah, yeah, no, that was good. It's
terrible, yes. I can't stop it.
I keep looking at that Holiday Inn or whatever. It looks like the Ark. It looks like, you know, you can just walk over and get on the Ark. Doesn't that look like an Ark?
It blows raining.
You know?
It looks like a Holiday Inn.
Yeah,
oh, it's a senior center.
Oh, okay, even more. Oh,
no wonder you. No wonder you're so attracted to it.
It does resemble like a holiday.
We can give you a ride.
Yeah. We'll carry you over.
I'll amble over there myself.
I'm checking in. I'm a senior.
So is there a good way to know which side of the membrane you're on?
It's quite clear. There's no mistaking it. And there is no membrane, and there is no you to be on one side versus another, right? Samsara and nirvana are not two. So this appears as an incredible ocean of impressions in which you feel yourself as a durable, right, actor or creature moving through impressions in space-time. Concomitant with that is absolute innocence, immeasurable sublimity. So you're not really on one, you can't possibly be on one side and not the other, because this is both.
Full time.
Yes.
Like last night, he was talking about the four levels or something.
Mix it up. Create an imaginary liturgy that you can burn in effigy the next time.
Last night he was talking about psychedelics, and then next week he'll be totally dissing them, so who knows? But there's no future, so it's all. But, I don't know, that may have pulled some interest to you. You can listen to it online now, so.
Yeah. So, you see, it's up to you.
Yeah.
Poetically speaking, it's up to you to reach into the architecture of your present experience and feel it through. That requires that a certain amount of attention be given to the present myth and mystery of what we're going to refer to as present experience. You have to, right? You have to be available. You have to be texturally available to feel yourself presently and not be lassoed or distracted by self-assessments, right? Or the imagination of past or future. Let's say you drop in to yourself.
But it's not a practice.
No.
I'm going to focus really good now.
No. Once you make it, once you turn anything into a fetish, whoop, it gets co-opted, you know. So we do this live, right? You always wake up live. You can't wake up in your past. You can't wake up in your future. You don't have one. You can only wake up in situ, live. That's where wake is, live, right? The entirety of the ecology of all impressions is made out of nothing. It's apparitionally expressed out of absolutely nothing. It has no durability. It has no independent reality. That's the discovery. And you can only do that, right, sitting on it, not askew or askance. Right here. So then this way, that's good though, because it releases you from having to be obedient to anyone or anything. The gift of your own autonomy is already present, you know, unwrapped and fully expressed.
Because if you don't exist, nobody else exists, so then you don't have to do anything.
Before you might reach a lofty place where no one else exists, you are supreme. Your being is supreme. Your present experience is absolutely supreme. You are absolutely autonomous. You may explore the profundity of yourself right about now. And as you, let's say, direct those calories into discovery and not become prey to rumination, fantasy, explanation, strategies, superstitions, beliefs, your powers of observation are immaculate and profound.
Yeah.
They really are. Your power of imagination is immaculate and profound. Of receptivity is immaculate and profound.
You can get more sensitive?
You could express it that way. The doors of perception, your aperture shifts. The aperture, which is already you, fully baked, the doors of perception, you could say the aperture widens. You feel yourself very differently than as a consequence of imagination.
Could you say it's because you're not laying claim to it?
Sure. Identity and claim are, right, all part of the package of myth. Yeah, because identity and claim can only come in after the fact.
Right.
They can't... Identity and claim can't be present. They can only be tag-alongs.
So you're just living a dream, then, by the identity and claim. You're just living this little narrow bandwidth of what happened to get recorded.
Yes, through identity and claim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well put. Yes. Profound. Samsara.
It's a consolation prize.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
That's all
yeah.
you get.
So this way you could say our agreement to party with contemplation is activized, is conversational, is encouraged and reinforced through, you know, open discovery, through open language, through what's present. No one has to go sit on a corner facing a wall on a cushion of their own liking, you know, isolating themselves from anybody else to have a decent meditation. Fuck that.
Open communal.
Yep.
Contemplation.
Yes.
Ice cream is a lot.
Yeah.
I was losing that word.
Yep. And it's interesting that if you learn how to participate in communal and archetypally vibrant meditation, the energy of those assembled is, yeah, right? It's borrowed. It's whoa. Yeah. It's different than, you know, going to the Vipassana retreat for 9 days and sitting on your own cushion. I'm not saying that's good, bad, or indifferent. It's just this is different.
A lot more fun.
I find it so. I mean, I can have fun on a Vipassana retreat. I haven't been on one in a long time. I'm sure if I committed myself, you know, it's like, you know, going to the mental institute. You have to commit yourself, right? Right, to the halfway house. So if I committed myself to some kind of, you know, thing, I'd sit there, you know, I'd sit and walk like everybody else and listen to the Dharma talks and probably roll around laughing. I don't know. Who knows what you'd do? But those can be fun. You know, even a weekend, you don't have to do 9 days. I mean, even a weekend of sustained sitting and walking practice is quite a bake. It's a good bake.
I cracked the giggles one time in the middle of a spinach salad at a silent meal.
They serve pesto, and I wept for an hour. You know, I mean, it was like, oh my God.
So it was laughing my whole, as long as it wasn't in words?
Yeah. Like, caught this other guy's eye, and he was in a weird mood, too. We both started, like, laughing, and I was like, yeah. You know, I had spinach all over my teeth, and it was just, that was even cracking me up even more. It was
yeah.
Really
yeah.
I would have been probably full-scale laughing had it not been for the spinach.
Yeah, my whole horrible pre-adolescence poured out over pesto. It's good. Just weeping hysterically. Just sobbing without end.
Was this pesto part of a ceremony, or where was the pesto?
I don't know. It was just a love trigger. I don't know. What could you say?
Can you get some more?
Oh, yeah. That'd be the only reason I'd go back. Be sitting there like, where's the pesto? Where's the pesto?
Try to recreate it.
Yeah, yeah. Try to recreate
it. You
never
can.
No, you never can. No, you can't.
Well, that happened to me during communion one time. First time I went to a Catholic church.
Did the church get something?
The church was doing communion, and I'm like with my friend, and I said, are we supposed to get up and go? Just no, no, they're just having coffee and donuts. And by the time I realized, I couldn't contain myself.
I know, it's not the funniest thing when you lose yourself in Catholic mass.
I thought I was having an epileptic seizure. I was trying to keep from laughing.
I had my best laughs in those Catholic churches where you just, you're with a friend and you're like, your body's shaking from the, oh my gosh, it was so fun.
We have the challenges, the yogic challenges. We must discover how, though it's, how is a little too strong. We must discover the texture of occupying our present experience behind the seductive power of discursive rumination. It doesn't mean you've stopped thoughts. If thinking is happening somewhere around here, right? Physiologically speaking, right? Thinking is happening somewhere around here. Go back here. Go back here. Once back there, it's not that difficult just to drool. A drool's a good word. Drool down your own spine. Into the presence of you. Attempting to feel or occupy sublimity from here.
Ain't gonna happen.
Have you noticed? Right? Because this is so proficient at impression, right? Manufacturing impression.
It's gonna sell your watches. Every time.
Every time. Hey, can I interest you in a watch? How about this one? How about that one? This one ticks. This one chimes. This one you can call Dick Tracy on. You're doomed, you see? So, physiologically speaking, and this isn't some kind of spiritual magic.
No.
And if Sahaja Yoga and Swami Ken were to be honest with you, they, instead of playing all of this absurd fanfare that sneaks up on you and confuses you, they would say, look, it's really, 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 really simple. Find out, discover how to...
That's a big thing in neuro, you know, in psychology now, they talk about bottom processing, bottom up or top down or something like that. You know, like some people are so in their heads here.
They would. It would be wise of them to take notice and then find the vocabulary to articulate it. Yeah.
So are you removed?
Removed? From? It's this. It's just this. Just now. You are already an incredible palette of feeling tone. You can feel from your ankle, from your adrenals. You can feel from your hips, from the tip of your nose. You can feel from the sensitivity of the hair on your face. Or, you know, the bottom of your ears. From your thymus, from your spleen. Your pancreas has a vibratory signature. It can feel. So, let's say you're... the mellifluous nature of the plenum, which is you, is global. Yes? Your sensitivity is in your globality. Jean Klein's, you know, phraseology, not jammed into discursive rumination. Right? And we are always remarkably, right, present through a very incredible sensitive palate of communion. Our habit is to blot that out, right, and fabricate. Thank you. fabricate an imaginary world in which we think we're living. So you feel yourself, meaning sensorially, not sentimentally. Feel yourself, the entirety of your present experience, feel yourself sensorially, texturally. Let that relax. Let that reveal. Let that speak to you. Let it inform you. Entertain you.
Will I be surprised?
I hope so. Aren't you living, as are we all, living in constant, remarkable surprise? And we don't take any notice of it.
And the thing is, at the same time, the overwhelming feeling is living in the opposite of surprise, you know.
Okay, we know that well.
Yes. And
isn't your present experience absolute surprise?
Well, if I experience surprise, that's good. And overwhelmed.
You become acquainted with it. We're all very, very well acquainted with discursive rumination, with fabricating an imaginary life of past and future, and self-accusation, projection and transference, irritability, insufficiency, some kind of oh poor me-ism, or unbridled appetite for more impression. It's madness. It's a kind of a madness. So we're just playing around with, well, here we are, mad as hell. Not going to take it anymore.
No choice.
And we're bringing to, let's say, conscious awareness conversationally and through textural participation what this actually feels like and how this reveals itself to itself when you get a few minutes break from discursive rumination. From thinking that you're the consequence of anything, or the product of anything, or that you have a future.
And there's people experiencing this full time?
Don't know.
Was you saying in the big book of AA, and I remember when I first heard it, I was like, me. That is your self-centered fears. It's like self-centered fears. Your fears aren't self-centered, but kind of like fears, you know what I mean? But when you think about that, you know, it's absolutely, even if somebody's physically attacking you, it's still so self-centered because you're worried about your physical self, you know? Not that that's a bad thing in the moment, but you're defending yourself physically, and then most of our fears are conjured by something that's going to happen to us, you know?
This is how conjecture and abstraction and hypothetical, right, ideation works. It moves into what if. So, if there weren't anyone, everyone is experiencing this full time. Somehow, inconveniently, it's just not recognized. It's not conscious. So you wouldn't define yourself as someone that lives in remarkable surprise, undifferentiated, ambiguous, remarkable surprise from moment to moment. Why? Because you're conservatively minded, like any of us, and you think that it's more appropriate to convey yourself as a guy with a past and a future. But your past is a myth. It's not just said for shock value that nothing happened to you prior to this moment. It's a fact. So, as we play around with any of these memes or cogitations or, you know, startle effects or observations, because we're doing conversational group meditation, right? Something is evoked, hopefully, right? Ideally. Something is evoked. A texture, a whiff of something, a discontinuity, a relaxation of what day it is, where you are, who you are, how you got here, where you need to go or what you need to do next. You might actually enjoy a moment or two, brief or maybe even with a little more duration of, I can't place this. That, you could say, is the refreshment of a profound, joyous invitation of novelty, quality of novelty. You can't place this. Feel it a little bit, and it's coming for you. Because you are so remarkable that once you get the slightest taste of you cannot possibly place this or frame this, you're going to go back to it. You will be compelled.
I wonder what somebody like Prahlad.
Yeah.
Shoot, I mean, like he observes people and behavior and actions.
Sure.
He's attached to none of it. Theoretically, think he is.
Fair enough. Good theory.
What's going on in his head.
No.
He's just a super duper great actor, you know.
Yes, he was indeed. He was that as well.
Okay. So, an actor that had his emotions completely under control, or maybe not so much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What does he think when he sees people like he's not attached to somebody at some point probably had to try to provoke him, whether they mean to or not, because that was the nature of their personality, or by accident Jeff provoked
what
him.
What do you know?
Really?
You
get out.
Who would have thought that you would have tried to provoke?
Did your tears come post-provocation or pre-provocation?
Was it the pesto?
I was 22.
Oh, boy.
I mean, you know, come on.
That's imaginable. And so he just, like, laughed? Or what? I mean...
He laughed, he cried, he yelled at me, he was generous beyond measure.
Himself, there's no, I still don't get that though. Like,
what?
How can there be, you know what I mean, like if you don't exist, then nobody exists, and
yeah.
So you're just...
You're not inert.
Yeah.
Let's say this is a dream.
Yeah.
Let's say... You are unencumbered by the magnificence of the dream. It doesn't mean you run off in a cave and order out.
No.
Or order in.
But it's still sort of weird.
There's still there. Life that seems to be...
Well, there's a resonance in the, you know, interplay of this and that.
Whatever this is or isn't is doing the entirety of all of these apparitional impressions.
So...
As a singularity.
As a singularity, yeah. So it's like a...
As a singularity is kind of a pitch. That's the mind blower. Yeah. Like, I'm getting peaks of, you know, it's just being done. Like, serious peaks of just being done. But as a singularity, it seems to be...
I mean, we're deconstructing all the time. That's what the frontal cortex is all about, right? It's deconstructing and defining and trying to frame it in such a way that it can make some sense to us or to give us a future.
We try to place our imagination of profound ineffability within the context of experiencing and impressions, right? The impressionistic myth. And so we might expect oneself or someone else to behave a certain way. So it's a hypothetical. Not that there's anything wrong with it, you see? But in a sense, one might be futuring. When I, or let's say so-and-so was, in a, right, remarkable condition of surprise, 24/7, wouldn't they do this versus that? Wouldn't they go here versus there? Wouldn't they behave like this according to my idealized sense of how I might like to be someday? Right? Which is great, because why not expand your imagination to, you know, play around with it? But you see, it can't, right? It can't land. It can't land. This is liquidating all the time, right? Or all the time is strange. Or even the notion of occupying a certain kind of, let's call it, spiritually enviable or exalted position as a constancy, right? Right? You're still dragging the ineffable, your instinct for the ineffable, back into the notion of a guy with a durable, yes, life. And therefore, my behavior would ideally be, all the time, look a certain way. But this is so liquid that you can't really put your finger on it ever at all to suggest what your experience of it should be from so-called moment to moment. Yeah, the gates of the rainbow body open up and your sensitivity shifts and you can actually find yourself being nourished and overwhelmed in a nice way with novelty because you're in a sensorial field which does not limit you to space-time.
Give the spiel that you gave last night very quickly to Kevin, the rainbow body and the void or whatever.
We're just playing around with, you know, for fun, something to create only to burn it, you know, later. That the miracle of attention, which is what you are now, right? The miracle of attention might go through a maturation process, might go through a journey to more, call it, refinement and subtlety. So it's a very wide palette, but for fun, let's look at four kinds of, you know, compartments. And compartments, of course, is foolish because try to put this in a box that it will stay in. Really, woo! It's better than hydrogen. Woo! Yeah, it's out of here. So the primate mind is space-time, durable self, operating within the ecology of impressions and experiencing. Samsara. Dissatisfaction. Dukkha.
Dukkha. What is dukkha?
Buddhist term for dissatisfaction.
Just a kaka.
Kaka, yeah.
Dookie. Dukkha is like dookie.
Well, existential panic. Foundational existential panic is dukkha.
Holy shit.
So if this, as this, you know, shifts and it occupies its globality, from the Tibetan metaphor, the rainbow body wakes up. All the filaments of your luminous egg, to borrow from Castaneda's myth, are lit up. And your assemblage point shifts from the primate, right, imposition to a different, whoa, more relaxed, available luminosity, receptivity, not encumbered to space-time. It needn't be a constancy. You know, a couple times a week, month, is good. Because it's coming at you. once you occupy that with some degree of confidence, meaning it's not just, you know, a one-off spiritual event, but it's actually starting to appear in your life.
At moments.
Fine. Yeah. Well, you can't help it but to start paying it more attention. Once sublimity starts showing up in your so-called ordinary rhythm of your day, in your ordinary consciousness, you just organically, naturally begin to pay it more attention.
Do you think, like I've heard the saying, that once you start to like light up, the darkness becomes like more... Yes, you know, like...
Why not?
The light obliterates the darkness. Darkness, by definition, like in other words, then you're acutely more aware of the negative crap that you're running, the negative stories.
Well, okay, that makes good sense, and a lot of the things that one might engage in for healing one's soul could be very useful, right? We might engage wisely in the healing of enmeshment and codependence and PTSD and victimization and broiling anger and confusion. Yes, victimization, right? All these things that occur within the, right, the primate psyche. But
dukkha.
Yeah, the dukkha, that's right. Chilling in the dukkha. We're just chilling in the dukkha. Yeah, so the rainbow body, right, is a metaphor for opening you to what this isn't, what's not happening. As our dear friend Paul Hederman likes to point out so well, right? What's not happening?
I thought it was Kermit the Frog. The rainbow
Kermit.
Connections.
Kermit's in there. Who knows where Jim Henson dwelled. Now, this matures as well. It doesn't just, you know, you just don't end up in, let's call it a bliss condition 24/7 so people can give you fine chocolate. But if you do, I want to sit by your side. Get a lot of chocolate that way. So that has to mature because this just doesn't stop. It just can't. It cannot. It never started. It can't stop. It never is anything, which means it can appear as, and does appear as anything. Concomitantly, all at once, as a simultaneity of nothing at all. So this rainbow body thing, which you could say is metaphorically poetic license, you know, is in the locality of you. Bodhicitta is non-local. As it matures, then radiant mind, bodhicitta, is non-local. Bodhicitta is radiant mind, non-local. Right? Immersion. Right? Immersion in radiance. Radiance immersed in radiance, which is what you are now. You are radiance immersed in radiance. You're already... It's already that. We're not reaching for the stars here. We're just... This is, you know... That's what this is.
Just acknowledging.
That's all. We're just playing around with, you know, right, the profundity of present experience and seeing what it's really about, what it's really doing, how it's actually presenting. Radiant mind from the... Wow. Fun. You get one of those little pressure things that go on, it's like your whole... You're like, what the fuck? The yogic perspective of the, you know, the chakra system, right? 1 through 4, heart, right? Christ opening the heart, right? And the throat is where the rainbow body begins. You could say the rainbow body begins in the throat. Non-dual, right? Non-dual receptivity. The ajna chakra is, you know, singularity, right? One-pointed singularity. It's the collapse of duality. So bodhicitta, you could say, from the Buddhist point of view, would be, you know, similar to the metaphor of radiant mind, Ajna Chakra, one-pointed, non-dual, no longer, you know, conscious of the corporeal sheath, whereas in the heart and the throat, there's still, right, remnants of the corporeal sheath being, you know, a useful or useless vehicle for you, right? But here, not happening, right? Ajna Chakra, corporeal sheath, thank you very much, you know, let someone else feed it. The top of the crown chakra is, you could say, synonymous with void, meaning bodhicitta, you could say, has a enjoyment. There's an enjoyment value. Radiance, immersed in radiance, is like, you got to be kidding me. You know? Like, if there was anyone to talk to right now, I'd say, this is the shit. This is unbelievable. Not that you can speak, because you can't. But, right, that shining still has kind of a... right, a remnant of recognition that it is so shining. Whereas the seventh, the crown, again, in this, you know, little weird thing we're talking about is no shining. No shining. Nothing.
Emptiness?
Yeah, well, the word emptiness, the word void, you know, Brahman, right? Brahman. Cessation and Nibbana, right? These are the metaphors that are used in the literature to point to the recognition of void.
Thinning out until Nirvana, as Shinzen Young would say.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Shinzen, yeah, Shinzen knows this shit well, right? He's a jhana master. So that's all. It's just nothing.
It all ends up as nothing. It's just nothing.
Yeah.
It's like not hearing nothing.
No, it's a fun way. It's a fun way of demonstrating that when we play around with words and evocation and call it conditions or positions of, right, radiant exposition, subtle, refined impressions, mm-hmm. that you can follow along.
From the four, it starts to thin out until it dissolves. Yeah.
Present. Mm-hmm. Yes, present. You see, we're not actually maturing into a, let's say, a refined mm-hmm. or enviable mm-hmm. spiritual thingamabob.
A better me.
There's no point.
Yeah.
There's no point. It's more radical. That's why it might be referred to as the left-hand path rather than the right-hand mm-hmm. path, because the right-hand path is additive and cumulative and, you know, mm-hmm. it aims. Mm-hmm. But the left-hand path goes... you are just startled into... realization.
That is Zen, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, that's what
yeah. Well, you know, Zen, yes, that's Zen, and then there are the, right, the encumbrances of the practice of
sure.
the Zen that creates, right, a intensity, a kind of a sensory deprivation process. Like, you know, some, like Guenka Vipassana is a deliberate sensory deprivation exploration to create catharsis, healing, release of prana. Zen has that same, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's useless.
Yeah, it's funny, when I think of Zen, I never think about all of that jazz. Sure, of course. That's...
Zen is designed to be profoundly cathartic, right? I mean, when you look at the literature, right, you're seeing an ecology and an atmosphere of cathartic, right, resonant breakthrough. Like the whole notion of messing with a koan. Sound of one hand clapping, you know, the sound of moo, right? You're sitting on the cushion and you're broiling, your temperature's up, your prana's recirculating profoundly, right? And you've got an interview in an hour and you haven't busted this koan yet, and you're fucked. And 2 minutes before the bell rings for you to go to your interview, you give up. Let's say you just give up. You don't answer the koan because it's not answerable. There is no reply to the koan. There's just...
like, isness or is-notness?
Sure. You're delivered to transcendence. You're delivered. through the giving up. Not the cleverness, not the success, right? Not the answering, not a clever retort. Not the lifting of one finger, whether it's this one or this one. No. The whole, you know, that, and Vipassana is similar, you know, Guenka Vipassana or even Insight, you know, Vipassana, Vipassana Light. You keep doing what we do conversationally together rather than in isolation on your own cushion. Is there self here? Is this moment the product of anything? The consequence of anything? Is there a takeaway? Does it benefit you somehow? Are you looking to occupy an improved impression? You want something to happen?
It's not working, so why the hell am I here?
Good question.
You don't give doggy bags.
No, the thrill of this for any of us is, well, I don't care what happened last night. Fuck that. You want to listen to the recording? Knock yourself out. Okay, we recorded it. That's a little narcissistic, but fuck it. You know, go ahead, listen to it. No, I want to start it from scratch.
Theoretically, it is, right?
That's the idea. Absolutely.
Which tells me it can't be cumulative. It's not cumulative.
No. It can't be.
Even if we play the recording right now. Right?
No. But still, you know, our dear friend Peter will say, as a kind of, you know, friendly encouragement, sincerely, right, evoked, this cumulative. And he's pointing to the bliss factor that as you stumble into a moment or two of irrefutable ambiguity, measurelessness, that's going to kick your ass. And
bring you back again.
And you're going to come back for more. And it will hunt you down and kill you. It's like, you know, you know it's okay if you leave me, right? What is that funny, you know? If you love them, you know, if you love someone, let them go.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If you love someone, let them go, yeah. You know, or make then hunt them down and kill them.
That's the second verse.
Same as the first. I'm Henry the Eighth, I am. Henry the Eighth, I am, I am. I got married to the widow next door. She's been married 7 times before.
Oh, God. That's good. Somebody laughing.
We were laughing one day about the radio, like, seeming to be in sync with what was you were talking about.
As you rest in reference-less availability, it's pure synchronicity.
Everything starts to make sense in a warped kind of way.
Play those shrimp.
And curiously, the synchronicity is not because it lands a certain way in the imagination of your life, which is one kind of synchronicity. The synchronicity is the revelation that it's so. One way we measure synchronicity is that was a hoot, that was right on time, that was a thing. And so the value of that kind of synchronicity is by virtue of the circumstances and events and the curious serendipity that we call my life.
Yeah.
Right? There's that synchronicity. This synchronicity is nothing to do with circumstances and events. How could this not be pure synchronicity? Yes? See? Bodhicitta. Rainbow body, the receptivity of being referenceless, occupying your own beatitude without reference, is pure synchronicity.
Is that why Frank played that Police album?
Yes, I hope so. I don't know.
I thought it was that he played the David Bowie.
We played Synchronicity, too.
Yeah. Synchronicity.
I like David Bowie.
You see how being is pure sufficiency. Not sufficient for you. Being is pure sufficiency. Unbroken, unadulterated, unencumbered sufficiency. Unbroken, unadulterated, unencumbered synchronicity. Radiant mind. Here
Why
it is.
Why did you say not sufficient for you?
Because there's no longer a you that's on the lookout for sufficiency as a remedy for the imagination of insufficiency.
Okay.
Right? That there is a you, or the idea of a you, is insufficiency.
Okay.
It's not that you suffer insufficiency by virtue of identification with impressions as self is insufficiency. Dukkha is embedded. It's not a consequence.
The additive aspect is the negative aspect or something.
Is what's present now, though nothing is actually present now, enough for you?
I could go for a little ice cream.
Maybe it's not enough.
This is destabilizing deliberately. Deliberately, emphatically destabilizing of the myth of continuity of self.
Undercutting is a good word.
Fair enough. That's why it's a little steep. It's an acquired taste, like a fine Scotch malt. This is not for public consumption.
People actively don't want to hear it.
Actively do not want to hear this.
Yeah.
Vehemently, enthusiastically, fervently, with tremendous verve and commitment, do not fucking want to hear this.
Yeah, that's right.
Right out the door.
So it seems.
Innocently stumbling into it.
Hiatus are us.
Are we in Hawaii?
We are now.